Gary Das, thank you for joining me on the podcast. Really appreciate you taking the time out.
Thanks for the invite.
Well, like, I'm not a fan of a huge CV intro, but I think with you, you need a bit of a CV intro. And what I'll always then ask is how you'd introduce yourself, because it's always very different, because those who know you, I've known you for what, best part of 7 years, ish now?
Yeah, 2017, I did the speaker training.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, 6, 7 years' time. During that time, I have known you in roles within the mortgage business, mortgage advisory business, your, you know, husband, your dad, your son, your podcaster, you are author, you are entrepreneur. It's like the list is endless. During just that short time that I've known you, how would you introduce you yourself today and what you do?
I would now say that I am a business consultant and investor.
Mm-hmm.
But that's been a very recent shift. As you say, I've been doing mortgages since 2003, had to diversify and do life insurance because of the credit crunch, then built an insurance business I absolutely hated that had me back to work 3 days after my first daughter was born because I just knew how to do stuff and work hard. I didn't know business, mm-hmm. didn't do any marketing for 10 years. And then my bank said no to me wanting to move. So I had an opportunity to downsize and then start all over again in self-employed mortgages, having done one mortgage, which was mine. And then went on a whole personal business marketing sort of development journey. And that's then now moved into teaching and training in my industry and then working with people from property to kitchen fitters to personal trainers to plasterers. But majority of my staff has been sort of service-based business owners.
Yeah.
So now I'm at the stage where my brokerage is automated and runs itself, but we're building it. My training company is now very refined with 2 tiers and 2 programs where I've probably had lots over the last 4.5 years of testing that. That the future is now about how can we better serve our existing clients, but then how can I equally build businesses around that ecosystem, which I don't want to start them all from scratch.
Mm.
I want to go and find something that, you know, a bit like you. You can look at a property probably and walk into, can I swear?
Oh, always.
So you'll probably walk into a shithole,
yep.
and be able to see it in its finished state of how beautiful it looks and the money that it's going to go. Your eyes almost go ka-ching. I can look, if I look at a house like that, it's a shithole. A shithole is a shithole. If I look at a business, I can go leads, sales, systems, team, problem, and then I'll be able to map out and in my mind we'll picture what the finished project looks like. And I just want to dive into something that's kind of already gone through that little bit of a hard start and the business owner's a bit stuck and stressed, and then just tweak everything and improve everything to a bigger, brighter future.
That's really different to what you've always done. So the reason I say that is everyone starts by let's go back, but I think it's really important for us to go back because yes, you've been doing mortgages since, did you say 2003?
Yeah.
So, you know, the best part of 2 decades doing mortgages. How was that your dream at school? You know, did you wake up one day and were like, oh, that's it. I know what I want to do. I want to be a mortgage broker. I'm going to assume not.
No, definitely not. And again, this is a real revelation. This is literally, again, in the last month, I've kind of come to this big realization. Exactly as you said, I don't like mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like property. And I was always really stuck with the idea of like Ben Francis had built Gymshark. He loved the gym. He built clothing.
Yep.
That was his passion. He turned it into an amazing hobby. You know, Joe Wicks is the other one. He loved fitness and he slogged his guts out of fitness. And now he's not particularly a good personal trainer, but he's the most well-known.
Yep.
I've always sat there going, I don't like really what I do. But what I do love is I love the problem solving. I love that someone comes to me with a puzzle and they've had a no from the bank or they've been to another mortgage advisor who said it's not possible. And then just piecing all those puzzle pieces together and going, ha ha, here's the right solution.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, again, I've kind of looked at where can I add the most amount of value. And I've been on this journey for the last 3 years of like, I'm turning 40. I've now got 3 at the time, now 4 kids. You know, I've been doing this stuff for 40 years of something that I don't particularly enjoy. And I chased money for my first 10 years of business. I don't want to do that for the next 40 years. You know, I want to have more time and I'm naturally quite lazy, but equally if I get lazy then I get bored and then I have to do more.
He's drinking what we just banking up before we hit record. And I think a lot of people will relate to that, and I think it's really refreshing to hear someone be so honest, because you know, I stand on stages and say, I start a property training by saying, just caveat it, I don't love property. And I think that realization that you have that you don't have to love it, oftentimes we see not always the real story either. It's often, you know, we see the tip of the iceberg where someone, you know, Ben Franz says, oh, he's this, but I'm sure he's got other visions and goals. And did he really love it to begin with, et cetera? So it was identifying what you wanted to do because, you know, you've openly admitted you weren't the most academic at school, weren't a huge fan of it. So, and I've heard you, you know, we've had many a conversation. I've heard you because I know that fitness is huge for you and hence the references that you've just made. In reality, you probably should have taken a completely different trajectory in life.
Probably. But I think, and again, funnily enough, I was having a conversation with my, I can't say sister-in-law because it's my wife's brother's girlfriend, but they've been together for a while.
Sister-in-law's the easiest explanation.
Yeah. And she's like, she's in fitness. She's just been given assistant manager about my local gym that I go to and that kind of stuff. I'm like, right, just learn everything here because then we can open that later and you got all of that kind of stuff. So it's like, the only thing I really remember is whenever I asked my mum what I wanted to do, there was two things. And it was one, work with my dad. And then two was make loads of money. That was all I said as a kid. And I always thought that I'd end up working with my dad, but my parents went through really hard times from the age of 6 till 16. Mm. And we ended up doing Northfield Market, which is local, and boot fairs every Saturday and Sunday. So I never really realised I actually ticked that off by the time I was like 15 years old, because it was every weekend when they were going through these hard sort of struggles. And he's always run a business from home. And then the other side of obviously trying to make loads of money, I did that kind of up until 2015, but felt the emotional trap.
Yeah.
But I never really knew what I wanted to do. I just knew that I'm built for office work, not manual labour. Can't hang a curtain pole.
So manual labour wasn't there, office work. And I think sometimes school kind of leads us down that direction. So you mentioned with your parents running their own business, that's something that you've seen. So would you say that you've always been quite entrepreneurial? Because you actually went into jobs initially, didn't you, in the mortgage industry?
Yeah, I left college and I'd always worked. I knew that that was something. So like I was a cocktail barman in a restaurant when I was 13 because I couldn't take cash. So I was allowed to be. I've worked at Halfords. I remember doing salt and pepper pots in the summer holidays where you like literally came off of the packing line. I'd rip a bit of plastic off and then chuck it in. And if it had a mark, it would go in the bin box. So I was always kind of motivated by wanting to buy my own stuff. But seeing, you know, being around dads, all those little kind of things, I think I always knew I was kind of unmanageable. And the school reports always said, you know, Gary doesn't pay attention and, you know, goes off into dreamland and all that kind of stuff. But I think in my journey of starting a business or in my journey of getting jobs, I got paid like 50 grand when I was 18 years old, spunked it all on loads of clothes and drinking. And didn't really do anything with it. Yeah. Temporary jobs. Then didn't really know what I wanted to do when they come to an end. Dad said, go and work for a bank because you're built for office. They'll always be around. And I was good at sales. So they moved me and progressed me really quickly. But my problem was always a lack of leads. Mm. And then the last job that I had in 2005 was when Money Supermarket and everybody came around. So it was literally, I could buy a name and a number.
Yeah.
And then I could build a business based on number of leads, number of sales, money that it made me and profit. And I literally did that for 10 years. So it was almost by accident, I had the pleasure of, you know, Woolwich, Connells, Alexander Hall, then building a business for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
There was just a case of I'm ready to do this on my own now. With that kind of entrepreneurial or business owner mindset.
It's always been there, really.
Yeah.
So it's always been there in the background, obviously nurtured by dad, but your dad telling you, and I find that really interesting because quite often, you know, parents who are entrepreneurial themselves, you know, being in business, is your dad still in business now?
Yeah, he's 80, what am I, 42. So he's 82 and he still does a 4-day week, £10 million a year business.
I love that.
But he's still, my mistake in the 10 years was I did what he did.
Yeah.
He still has the finger on all the pies. He never delegated. He always delegated, but he would always still see what's going on.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm like, that's your job. That's your role. You crack on now and we'll check in weekly if you're doing it.
Yeah.
He's
a bit of a micromanager, is he?
He likes to know.
Interesting. He got to, you know, £10 million plus business. Imagine where we'd have been if he'd have done what you do. But you've always had that entrepreneurial spirit. You've always followed that route. You know, I always find it interesting as well, because with the children, how old's your eldest now?
11.
Yeah, so my eldest is 13. Just about to go into, you know, choosing his options, etc. And my viewpoints around school changed massively when I became an entrepreneur, because listening to what you're saying, you know, it, from the outset, it's like, well, if you're getting those kinds of grades or if you're getting those kinds of results in school, you shouldn't really be doing what you're doing. But actually, you are really academic, because your ability to solve a problem, to do the end-to-end process, to, you know, create the leads and the marketing and the sales and do a full end-to-end business. Isn't that what we should be teaching kids at school? Because that's the lifeblood of any business, whether they are the employee and going to be the internal eternal employee, or whether they're setting up their own businesses. And that's why, I mean, I know that you're really passionate about it, but there's been some big risks along the way, surely, because you've gone from them building other people's businesses, making them wealthy. What was the crux or the turning point where you kind of went, was it as simple as, I've done this for other people, I should do it for myself, or was there a turning point?
It was more a practical application. So in 2016, when I started again, I started using social media after doing 10 years of no marketing. Then in 2017, I wrote my first book. And then in 2018, when it was released, my industry started asking me for help.
Yep.
And that just became too much. That in the end, I just went, right, I need to structure this in a way that it makes it a little bit more worth my time, because I'm giving you so much free time that I need to do something. So I'd been part of a membership sort of platform, and I just said, right, I'm going to charge £99 a month, and every week I'll teach you for an hour something that I have learned.
Yep.
16 people signed up. Within 3 months, 8 were still with me. We then did a launch off of the back of those results, and we ended up with 50 people joining in the August of 2018. And then that sort of slowly but surely just has progressed. And I closed it for a period of time, because obviously we were talking before.
Yeah.
At £99 a month, it's the gym membership that people never show up to and use.
Yep.
And I had 175 members at my point, and it always frustrates me that 20 people would turn up to the weekly call. And I literally got to a point in May 2021 where I was just like, right, I'm done. I'll close it. That's £20,000 a month guaranteed income gone.
And so that's a huge risk.
Yeah, I'm fed up of the people I'm fed up of the dreamers rather than the doers.
Yeah. So even though it was guaranteed income, because prior to that, you've been spending a lot of money on your own marketing and, you know, your businesses, and realizing it wasn't done. So was it very much that there's a problem, no one's solving it, I'm going to get my hands dirty and do it myself?
Yeah.
Because I remember this launch, I remember you putting a little message on one of the groups that we were a part of for the mastermind, and it was like, oh my God, 56, 57 people.
Yeah.
So to build that business, to earn income, remembering that as a child, you wanted two things: to work with dad, which you'd not actually done by this point, and then to make loads of money. Was that the turning point for you realizing, because obviously by this point, you were on like a bit of a personal development journey, the money isn't all it's cracked up to be, and I don't want that. So what's important to you in business now?
Success.
What does success mean now?
Whatever it means to the individual. And I think for me, what it took me a long time to realize was that you can make money relatively easily, particularly now with the world of social media and posting. And I saw a TikTok yesterday, which was like the top 10 most paid TikTok people, and like Logan Paul was in there and all that. And they're earning millions. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But they're just building brand, you know, they're just putting themselves out there. They're then creating products for the audiences that they're building. And I think it's a lot easier than it was when I started in 2003, where I had to phone the Yellow Pages or, you know, go do an evening appointment and then go and knock the next 10 doors, knowing that it would get me one appointment, come rain or shine, had to knock 10 doors to get my next set of sort of appointment.
Yeah.
So now I think my goal and realization was like closing the membership was, I'm not fulfilling myself, because I'm leading the horse to water, but I can't make them drink. And it's still a big challenge that I have, because I just want everybody to succeed. And it's like, no matter how much I break things down to give people the ingredients and the recipe, and all they've got to do is just literally go, I'll bake the cake.
Yeah.
Most people just still don't do it.
See, this is the conversation we were having before we hit record, is that entrepreneurialism, owning businesses, running businesses, is not for everyone. And, you know, I believe everyone's capable of doing it. That's my personal viewpoint. So what are the motivating factors? Is it, you know, moving away from fear? Is it that people are too lazy? Is it that there's no need because there's an easy way to do it, going into a job if you don't have to do any, you know, a 9-to-5 or living on, you know, support from the government, whatever it is, what do you think it is that is the big difference between, as you mentioned, the dreamers and the doers?
It's a really good question that I still haven't found the answer to. And I've spent all this year restructuring everything. And in 2021, I moved from charging £99 a month to £5,000 for the exact same thing, had a lesser group, gave them more, and you still saw exactly the same percentage end up doing nothing.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't matter how much people pay or how much they invest. I think that's why I've kind of sat down, and we were saying before, when I work with somebody, the first thing I start with is the design of what they want, what's the lifestyle, what's the financials that give them the lifestyle, and then what's the business that give them the financials and then give them that lifestyle. And it's like, if we don't get the lifestyle piece right, of, I have a dream analogy. So it's like, how much are you, what dedication are you willing to put in from, you know, your time, all that kind of side? What resources have you got and what resources do you need? What earnings do you want and what earnings do you need? Because we can't obviously reverse engineer it.
Yeah.
What affinities, you know, so where are your skills best set? I tried to do everything in that stupidity in my early days of no one can do anything as good as me. Now I'm like, I realize, and this is like that whole thing they don't teach you in school. It's like, now it's actually a really good thing as a business owner to get other people to do your homework, because they're way better at doing your homework than you are. And again, in my early days of business, I was really cheap. I was like, I don't want to pay. And I would train everybody.
Yep.
Now I'm like, no, find the person who's the video expert or the Google ad person or the Facebook.
Pay them handsomely.
It costs you more money, but you actually invest way less time in trying to sort them out. So get really clear on where are my skills.
Yep.
And nailing that in terms of my affinity for myself, I can then recruit people who are better at everything than me. And then the M is about mindfulness towards yourself. So it's about that health. What do you want from a vitality point of view? Do you want to lose weight? Do you want to build muscle? Do you need to take some time back? You know, and actually, if you're going to build a business, let's build your dream lifestyle and get all the whys out, because then that becomes, I think, the constant thing you can refer back to on the days where it gets hard.
Yep. And the days where things go well, remembering why you're doing it.
Yeah.
Singing from the same hymn sheet completely, but you and I both know that you can sit down with 10 people, do exactly that, and they'll go through the whole process and the plan, but won't necessarily do the work. And I guess for some people, it's just not the right thing. And I have a massive amount of you know, respect for people who just go, it's not for me. And I'm a huge believer in people being great at the job. I have a huge amount of gratitude for those who are great at the job, because I couldn't do what I do without it. You couldn't do what you do.
Yeah.
How then do we kind of create that ideal lifestyle for people and help them to understand what's important for them? Because you've helped the people at the £99 a month, and I've been guilty of that, paying the £97.99 a month, you know, doing absolutely fuck all with it. You see the bank account many, many, many moons down the line and go, oh, spent this much money. And I haven't even checked in on one of them was a Facebook group. You know, how many different subscriptions do we have for £3, £6, £9? And it's not paying full. But we're seeing at the other end of the spectrum, you're saying, you know, you're doing a £5,000 and I'm doing this with a £15,000 and a £40,000 mentorship program. And I think it's relative, isn't it? Because if you can drop that kind of money on a program, whether it be 6 months, 12 months, whatever, but don't show up. And I don't just mean, well, physically showing up is the first one. People don't do that.
Yeah.
Actually showing up and doing the work. So has your criteria massively changed? Do you still do, are we focusing on quality rather than quantity? Do you work one-on-one with people? How's that changed as a result? Because you're no longer chasing the money. But the irony being, I'm guessing now you're making even more money as a result of working one-on-one or with the smaller groups.
Yeah, so I focused mostly this year on building the higher level program, kind of the leads to lifestyle element, which follows the four phases: design, foundation, build, and optimize. But it's a virtuous, never-ending kind of cycle. In that, because it's the year one of working at my highest price that I've ever charged, we're only working with 27 people. Three of them we actually got rid of, because everything that I'm doing every month is a test as to how quickly they will implement and how quickly they will do. So I think almost like I use the fitness analogy in my thought process around it is, you know what it's like? If you want to lose weight and you don't lose in the first week, 2 weeks.
Oh, I'm cool. Just dying for 5 minutes and I've not done 5 stone. It's shit. It doesn't work.
But when you get that real hit early doors, you feel that little bit of oomph to keep going. It's the quick wins.
Momentum.
So the focus that we put time and energy into is when I did it in the early days, it was literally just me. So I did all the delivery. I did all the weekly calls. And I only had so much capacity because I was still trying to build the brokerage.
Mm.
Now I've got my team in the brokerage that are accessible to the higher level. You know, my team do calls. My marketing guy answers something. My ops person all dives in. So we provide a bit more self-catered support and a bit more one-to-one accountability. But it's not all reliant on me.
Yeah.
And then Camilla's exceptional at that. So his client success is really her thing. And then she will, everyone goes to her. She checks in on whether they're looking at stuff. And then it gets, where are you stuck? And then they go to the right person based on where they're stuck. And then the membership side, we've just launching or quote for, we're going to do quarterly. But again, we've added weekly touch points, not all delivered by me. We've got themed kind of monthly guests, and then we've got quarterly in person.
Yep.
And then the community, and then the classroom. And again, we've just got automation on the back end to basically kick people. Are you moving? Are you going? I think one of the big things I've taken the pressure off of myself was not everybody needs everything. So again, using that kind of gym analogy, some people will go to multiple different classes. Some people will go and only use the cardio machine. Some will go and only do the weights. Some will use absolutely everything. And typically, you'll end up with walkers, joggers, runners, sprinters.
Yep.
And the sprinters are the ones that, not being arrogant, but the you and I's of the world that just...
I don't know, we're not very good at the front and on beyond the foot. Go on there and just do
the work.
Yeah.
You know, you learn something, you implement it. That's why you're the trainer that you are. That's why you've had the property success that you do. And I think probably one of the biggest things that stop people is that fear. Because we're told, aren't we? I constantly drum that into my kids. It's like, we got all the performances going on for my year seven for Emily, and she was like, I don't want to go, we've got the school play, but I'm not going to do it because the whole school's doing it. I was like, well, why? She was like, well, because all the year 11s and that will get all the performances. But you're a really good singer. Just go and try. And it's part of the learning process. If you don't get it, don't worry about it. So she got it.
Yeah.
No, she didn't get it for this whole school, but she's got a solo in the year seven performance where yesterday she found out that the two people are supporting her are two of the year 11s, one who's in Matilda and another one who's just come out of another play in London, because that's the thing that they're doing. She's getting one-to-one attention from there.
How amazing is that?
And it's just like...
But if she hadn't put herself out there, or more importantly, didn't have you going, yeah, you can do it, because it's very easy to want to shield your kids from it.
Yep.
You know, we want to save them. You're right. Maybe you should take it, you know, give it a go when you're in year 11. And I think there's a lot that can be learned from that. You probably became a bit of a micromanager or a do-it-yourself kind of person. And I've definitely been guilty of that. You know, I still openly admit the biggest challenge to my businesses growing early on was me. I was the bottleneck in the business. It was I'll do it. So you'd seen that with your dad, fingers in all pies. You'd built a very successful business. So, you know, what's in the cat's in the kit, and you do exactly the same. How then did your dad take it when you started saying, oh, actually, what I'm going to do is remove myself from the business. I'm going to hire all of these brokers, and I'm going to do all of the leads and the stuff that I'm really good at, but I'm going to give them the leads.
Yeah.
I'm then going to, you know, build, I'm going to oversee, I'm going to be the person, the umbrella over the whole business. How did your dad take that?
I think part of his thing was he was absolutely fine. So the one thing that dad's always done is still, I use this method today. So I've got a big decision to make. It's literally lying down a piece of paper. Pros and cons, advantages, disadvantages, and just go with, you know, the one that's the biggest. Because you're never going to be 100% on any decision that you make. But he had a couple of business partners previously that had basically stitched him up. One was his brother. Another guy was a person who lived in Spain. So I think his micromanagement and his mindset had been to kind of keep holding, keep too many chickens in the pie from an element of fear.
Yeah.
You know, but that being said, it still ended up being a successful business, still had a big team, still doing big levels of imports, completely different industry to what I'm kind of doing. So I think when I said to him, now's the time, I started building team in 2011, but I let my best mate buy in, bought him out 2 years later. We scaled too quickly, didn't manage the people. They weren't converting sales, got rid of him, bought in an admit, kept my PA, got rid of him. Downsized again, started again doing the insurance, but I was still again the first in, last out. Even though I was building a team, I didn't understand.
Was it a badge of honor though?
Say again.
Was it a badge of honor though? Because I think that is the case with quite a lot of people. You know, I'm the first one here. I was here before all of you. I'm the last one out.
Yeah.
Where now perspectives change and you're kind of going, shit, if you need to do that just to get the job done, maybe you're not the right person for the job.
Yeah.
So when bringing in your best friend, I need to ask the question, is he still your best friend?
When you go into business partnership with someone, if that end, that relationship ends, then the whole thing ends.
And I think that, again, people jump into it because they go, I see this a lot in the property world. You know, I've got this person in my network who's got some money. They're going to be my business partner. And I'm like, but do they fulfill all of the criteria here? I almost got into a JV partnership with someone who was absolutely lovely. But it got to the point, you know, when your phone rings and you go, oh. And I thought, am I that person for you?
Yeah.
I'd hate to be that person. So I think there's a lot of lessons along the way, but there's been a lot of risks. You know, it could have a breakdown of relationship. A lot of people stay in relationships, whether it's a life relationship or a business one, you know, to not worry about the fear of breaking it down. So you've had people buy into the business, you've bought them back out of it. You've had a lot of challenges along the way. You know, you're in the professional industry, you're in the finance industry, COVID hits, you've then got to adapt to that. And yours was, by that point, you were running face-to-face events, weren't you?
So I planned 30 face-to-face events in the February of 2020 for the training business. I'd just taken on 5 new advisors that were based up and down the country. Luckily, they weren't in my office.
Yes.
But then obviously a month later, we couldn't get together because we were all locked down. So I had to completely shift 26th of March. I remember it was a Friday. I literally had to change the whole business model that weekend to then work out what was going to go. But fortunately, that seems to be
worked out perfectly,
because it's just a problem and a puzzle that I needed to solve that had a couple of sleepless nights. But within it, the new puzzle was formed for the not too distant future.
How do you build that resilience though? Because there's also been, you know, things in business, you know, failed partnerships in business, your world stopping, turning, you know, thankfully mortgages actually came out the back end of it even better off. But there was, you know, a fear factor at that point of like the whole industry that you're in and immersed in is going to fold. You've had personal challenges when, you know, losing close members of your family close to you, when, you know, newest baby was born and having illnesses. How do you deal with all of that? How do you build resilience?
I think the same way you build muscle, it just takes practice. And each time it gets, you know, I've probably had 50, 60 people on my team over the last 19 years or whatever. You know, it never gets easier letting somebody go. But it's, for me, someone said, there's a few things that have happened over the years. And if I was going to give someone advice now, I'd be like, remember that business is a logical sport, not an emotional one. So you have to play logically rather than letting emotions cloud your judgment or anything else, which again is hard because we're emotional human beings. The NLP saying that stuck for me is there is no failure, there's only feedback. And one of my first, I mentioned earlier about the Zenith Windows kind of cold calling-y type jobs, my manager said to me, you've got to find 99 no's in order to be able to get one yes. If he'd have said, you've got to find one yes, that completely switches the mindset around making those calls. Whereas for me, it was like almost having a line of 100 lines. And every time I made a call and got a no, I just ticked one off.
Yeah.
And I knew I was getting one step closer to that success. And I think anything that's kind of happened is, my wife now says to me, as a result of losing mum and stuff, it's like my whole thing is just like, what will be. We can only control what we can control. And you just have to keep slowly but surely stepping forward and hope that it's in the right direction.
But did that make you change your mindset around, you know, from going, by this point, you were no longer first one in, last one out.
Yeah.
But you were still busy.
Yeah.
Busy giving your time to your mentees, busy building the businesses, growing it, getting more and more advisors online, you know, tapping into all of these different niches and markets. And around that time, you know, COVID and post-COVID, there was also, you know, Clubhouse, which ruled everyone's life. Cool. And then wanting to build all of these other businesses off the back of it and the podcast. So how did you then, because you've kind of scaled it all back and you're focusing on, you know, one particular thing. And
yeah,
I'm a massive believer in this, but I think you have to go through the pain to get there. We focus a lot on the schools teach us this though, don't they? When we go to schools, when we go to college, when we go to university, you're not very good at that. You should focus on it. Absolutely not. If you're not very good at it, leverage and outsource it. Double down on the things that you're good at. But from a really young age, we're taught something completely different. So how did you kind of create that ability and what challenges have you had along the way? Because I think it's very easy for people listening to the podcast to kind of go, yeah, well, it's all right for Gary, because you have had, you're a very resilient person. You've got a really positive outlook. You are a problem solver by nature. So, you know, bring on the next one, bring on the next one. But there must have been some times along the way where you've just thought, fuck it, I'm not doing it anymore. It's no point.
Yeah, 2015 was the fuck it, not doing it anymore, no point. I was spending 20 grand a month on these low quality leads and I built the business that I hated that was back to work 3 days after my first daughter was born. You know, and sometimes I'd drive home and would stop before I get there to kind of realize that, you know, I need to leave that person who's mentally stressed and emotional and blah, 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 to go into the house with the wife and the two kids that I had at the time. But I think that's where, for me, the staple of everything has always been my gym, like the stress reliever of lifting iron, which now has hindered my back and things like that over the years of doing it. But having, that's why I like mindfulness is part of the whole dream aspect of stuff, because often we can do one area really, really well, and it's how we can almost transmute those skills into other areas.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose I would always come back to my line down the piece of paper, advantages and disadvantages, and just what's the worst that can happen, I think.
You're a very logical thinker in that way.
Yeah.
Did you have to learn to leave emotion to one side, or have you always been, had the ability to kind of let emotion stand to the side when focusing on business?
My dad's very unemotional, and my mum was very emotional. Mm-hmm. My dad was very half glass half full and optimistic, never saw downside realistically, which hindered him a few times. Yeah. My mum was the complete pessimist. So I think seeing that helped kind of growing up. But yeah, even with my mum, I actually thought there was something wrong with me mentally, because I was completely logical about the whole thing. I got emotional when she was given, she basically had a bowel op in July 2021. And then that brought on Alzheimer's and dementia. And then she got hit by COVID. And then 2nd of January, she was given 48 hours to live, but she was in the middle of COVID at that point. And then she survived till the April. And other than that kind of time of getting emotional there, I think I thought there was something mentally wrong with me, because I just didn't face the emotion of it all. And obviously, speaking to my brother and my eldest brother and sister, you know, they're very emotional. They are, you know, prodigies of my mum from that sense. Whereas I think I do have more of a nature that's like my dad. So I think I'm quite fortunate in the sense that I immediately attack things from a logical standpoint of view. So I can only talk from that angle, you know, and it has its pros and its cons. I think that's probably what makes me quite good at problem solving and solution finding.
Absolutely.
But yeah, there's definitely something wrong with me.
I think it's something right with you. And I think that's because we're taught by societies that we must act in a certain way. We're taught at schools that we must do certain things, you know, in the jobs. It's there's never a grey area. It's always black and white.
Yeah.
So therefore, the viewpoint of, you know, I lost my mum, as you know, when I was 21, which was, I don't care what age you lose a parent, and God forbid, I'm in a very fortunate position. There are people who've lost children, losing anyone close to you. It doesn't matter what age it happens at, it's never the right time. And I think I remember at that time, obviously, it was the challenges, and a lot of it was avoidable in that respect. You know, there were things that weren't done. There were the challenges along the way. And I can't even imagine how hard it was, because the me of being 21 was the very much, it's not fair. You know, my mum was only 64. So your mum was really young when she passed away as well.
Yeah.
You know, she was only 64. I was only 21. It's not fair. You know, but I actually, with hindsight, have a lot of gratitude that she went in the way that she did, because my mum passed away really quickly at home on her own, just her and dad. But you obviously had a really fast process of your mum being diagnosed with dementia and Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
People often say that you lose people twice. What lessons did you learn from that you can take forward? Because you are a logical thinker, you know, you see the good in everything, and it was a heartbreaking situation that you went through. What lessons have you learned along the way?
So I mentioned earlier, up until my 40th birthday, I'd been on this thing of like, what the hell do I want from the next 40 years? And I'd said yes in COVID to way too many things. New business partners, new business opportunities to fold stuff into the ecosystem. I spend 4 months on Clubhouse with one earphone in, got 25,000 followers, all that. Luckily, the gym's opened again. So I was, can't claim and bang with that. It made it now. So I was forced out of that. I'd launched programs, I'd renamed programs, I'd done all this stuff. And then sort of that January point, I'd just thought about, so I'd actually, through COVID, I tried to build my office 3.5 hours away in Evesham.
What led to you wanting to do that? What was the process behind that?
When I started to, I basically realised in 2016, I didn't want to be an advisor anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So every decision that I made was around how can I sort of remove myself from the day-to-day. But I had to go through that 3 years of learning the industry again and getting into social media and generating enough leads to make it possible for me to recruit. So in 2019, I took on Sally, who was based in Wales, and I'd set the systems up to work remotely, because up until that point, I was chained to an office. And I was like, I want the autonomy and the time and the freedom. So I solved that problem with Sally. I then took on Andrew in Evesham in 3.5 hours away, who used to be a Halifax branch manager.
Wow.
So he managed people and all that kind of jazz. So when I took the advisors on in February 2020, just before COVID hit, by the time we got to that March point, I was like, I cannot manage these five. I'm not a people manager. Andrew, do you want to step up and do the one-to-ones and check the system and all of that kind of stuff that I realized I didn't want to do? And then it just became a logical choice by around about, I think we had all the valuation stuff and we couldn't go out, around about sort of August or September time, maybe.
Yeah.
I opened that office in Evesham and we built a team of six there. But the problem was, as great as Zoom was and this online world that everybody talks, it doesn't work. And there's nothing that beats sitting around this table now and spitballing stuff out, drawing on a whiteboard. On Zoom, everybody talks all over each other. And
the delays, the lags, the you're on mute.
Yeah, it's all more time. I can't stand it. So essentially, I closed that office and opened back here, where we are today, which was my first office in 2009.
Oh, so it's the exact same location?
Yeah, the room was still
full circle.
And obviously, I know the landlord really well. My wife cuts his hair and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, I just said, hey, is your room still free? So that literally the week after I moved in here was when my mum had the bow lot. So what that taught me in the January was, one, I couldn't be in the business. So I had to just let people crack on. And actually, we grew 50% that year without me realistically being in it. The second thing was, it made me realize, okay, I don't need to be first in, last out. And it can still, if people know what they've got to do and they have a bit more autonomy, you know, if you're not there, they've got no one to ask. You know what it's like? All of a sudden you go into the office and everybody fires questions at you. It's like, well, you weren't doing this yesterday. But also the big thing that shifted in me most, more than anything else, is I've come to realize a lot of people who we surround ourselves with will work 365 days a year and will almost prioritize business and money and the school board over the lifestyle, the family and the kids.
Yeah.
And that rude awakening kind of just, it was almost a gift from that point of view to say, look, you need to put your time, energy and attention elsewhere. And that's why, you know, Leads to Lifestyle came around, because all I talk about is lifestyle.
Yeah.
How can we get a better lifestyle? How can we start a business that actually gives us the life that we wanted when we truly started, rather than ending up on this hamster wheel of, you know, we go two steps forward and three steps back, and actually very few make progress of getting to where they really want to, because they haven't clearly defined that why. And I think it's just everything for me now, particularly this year, has just been hugely slowing down.
Have you found that by slowing down, you've actually grown more?
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting? And again, there's a lot of conflicting information that you get from different sources, you know. I'm not a huge, I know you're an up early and go to the gym kind of person, but mine is I need sleep. So if I need sleep, that doesn't mean that I get up at, you know, 10 o'clock. I'm in an accountability group. I'm a massive fan of accountability. In the accountability group with a couple of other ladies, solely for, this is not a paid for thing. This is us kind of going, let's hold each other to account, because all three of us are really busy. We're in similar industries.
Yeah.
We can't just do the set routine of be in this place at this time, because we all travel a little bit. But in those kind of environments, it's me saying, oh, I had a lie-in till 7:45 this morning. And it was like, now in some industries, you say, oh, I had a lie-in till 7:45 on a Saturday morning. And it's like, oh, you've missed the day. You've failed.
Yeah.
You do have set routines for it, because that works for you. You know, your gym is an outlet for you. You know, you've obviously opened up and kind of said it was the thing that supported your mental health through the challenges.
Yeah.
The realization that you don't have to follow the guidelines and be where everyone says you should be at those days and those times. How difficult do you find it to showcase that to other people? Because quite often the people who are coming to you, people who come to me in my business, are very often right at the start of their journey. And they're the you of 2003 who wants lots of money and wants to do the first in, last out.
Yeah.
Is everyone trainable in that way?
It's a really good question. And I still struggle as well, by the way. Like, my whole thing was like, lead by example. I still live by that relentlessly, which is a gift in the fact that I do stuff, but it's equally not. Because I still feel like I need to be in first in, last out.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm out of the office, I feel like I need to make up the time in the evening.
Do you
feel
the guilt still?
Yeah.
Some guilt when you're at work, away from the family, you know, you've got a gorgeous wife, four gorgeous kids, and, you know, your dad's still around, brothers and sisters, etc.
Yeah.
So do you still suffer that? Because I think that's important for people to learn. I do a lot of, I very rarely post on social, you know, practice what I preach. And I know you were the expert and you've focused on that going forward. But quite often we focus on the wrong areas, don't we? Or we're told, oh, you shouldn't feel guilty. And my best social media posts that get the most traction are usually when I'm going, I'm really struggling right now.
Yeah.
Really struggling right now because I'm tired, or here I am on a walk with, and the kids aren't even featured in the picture. So is everyone trainable in that way to then kind of help them? Or are there some people who just can't be helped?
I think there probably are some people that can't be helped because they don't really want it for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I always talk about they want the baby, but they don't want the labour pain.
Yeah.
But I think it's also really important that people have a process to kind of follow. Because we are process-orientated humans as much as we don't want to necessarily be. And everyone says that, you know, having a routine is like, oh, it's too restrictive and all this, that and the other. You know, you've got kids. I don't know if you did, but I'm a massive advocate of like specific bedtimes, predict wake-up times. All these people who let their kids stay awake till 9, 10 o'clock at night and then moan that they're always tired and unhappy and cry always.
The continual argument. Such your body's allowed to stay up till such a time, and if you ever opened your mouth and your parents have come out and I'm like, I'm not there more, oh my god, that's the thing. But they, is that not why potentially we've created success in our lives? Is because that was instilled in us from a really young age.
Yeah.
You know, my kids get up for school, my kids get up at 6:40 every morning because we leave at 7:30, and they need that time frame to give them enough time to eat and get showered and get ready, etc. But I know in the world of most people, that's mean. Well, we live a fair distance away from school. My kids do taekwondo Monday, Wednesday, Friday evening. 3 hours. So they do 2 hours Monday, two Wednesday, two Friday, three on a Saturday, competitions on a Sunday. This weekend, they've done, I mean, granted, they do a lot more than me. They've done squad training on Saturday in their local clubs. And Chris drove them to Luton, which is, I don't even know how far it is, 2.5 hours-ish from Liverpool. Drove them to Luton for 3 hours of squad training and drove them back. But that's because of those routines that they are doing really well in life. And they're not, you know, I've got one who's a genius without trying and one who has to try really hard, but is a sports specialist.
Yeah.
How important is it to let our kids, you know, put the guidelines in place and the routines that we have from a young age, which is why we do it. And then, you know, we grow up and we get up at, you know, later or whatever. How important is that to have the guidelines in there, but give them the freedom to be more of what they want to be rather than, you know, you're told to go into banking because that's what Dad said.
Oh, without a doubt. It's like we were saying earlier with Emily. For me, it's like I talk to her. The thing is, I'm all or nothing. So it's like, I said to me, look, if you want to go down this route of West End and theatrical and all that, like, unless you tell me otherwise, I am all in on making this happen, because that's, I think, focus is what's really needed. And I think that, again, is so important for people to say, like I did 2017, 2016, I don't want to advise anymore. Then it became a message of, I want the business to run without me, because if it's always reliant on me, then that obviously happened. And some family stuff made that happen a bit quicker. You know, 2017, I had my first ever coaching session, and it was like, I don't want someone to build a business the way that I did for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody who isn't currently where they want to be hasn't set a clear enough destination, because then every decision should just move you one step closer to that destination. And even for kids, like you were saying, David Beckham didn't practice football kicks with his left foot. He just did free kicks with the right foot. So if we have a routine and we have habits, and you listen to anything that, you know, that is success orientated or from successful people, they'll have habits and they'll have routines. And that's what ultimately dictates the outcome. But equally, we can get more done.
Yeah.
You know, what was it? I think I saw a stat the other day that you can only... There's obviously varieties of, you can do Pomodoro effect, or you can do 45 minutes worth of work and 15 minutes off, or we can only have attention span for an hour and a half. But we all know that if we're going on holiday and it's a 3-day week, we'll cram 5 days worth of work into 3 days.
Don't worry.
So it's like, actually, if we just focus and if we take the pressure kind of off and go, right, 6 hours worth of meaningful, focused, non-notification, non-email orientated work. I love being in this office with the team. But I get 3 times the amount of stuff done at home, because I live by that, whereby I sort of end up spinning plates and we have a chat here and there, and it's all kind of everything, you know. So it's it's just knowing what you want and then being really specific with what you want. And I think instilling that on your kids is vital as well.
So you're doing that with Emily now, whereby, you know, you want to be on the West End, you want to feature on all of these great shows, we do this much time. And do you do the same things? This is your free time, this is your organised time, is that strategy?
Yeah, I think it's a case of, it's good because the school does stuff. So she goes to Tomorrow's Talent and she won something on Sunday as well, where she did the singing, and she's got like one-to-one attention during half term now for this performance that she's now doing for them, which is also the same song she's going to do in the year seven performance. So it's just like you with Taekwondo, you have the one thing that you're potentially doing, and she wants a sport outside. And then you just, we end up being taxis, don't we?
Yep. Chris more so than me, I've got to say.
I was at gymnastics last night with Willow. I'll be dropping Emily off at Tomorrow's Talent on Saturday and then going to that. I'll be taking Hunter to football. Wife's obviously looking after the fourth, which is the youngest. But it's just being really structured and really routined.
Is this what it was all about though? Are you really happy in life right now? Because you've designed a life that gives you the ability, unlike many people, to be the taxi. You know, for many people, that's the goal, isn't it? To have enough free time to be the taxi for the kids. Are you really happy right now?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, probably the happiest I've been in a very, very long time. But equally, on the other side of the coin, it's almost that thing wanting to grow as well, because I don't want to go, there's almost a fear from my side of ending up back where I was in 2015.
Yeah.
So the need to learn and the need to progress, and almost I've become comfortable with the fact that I'll never be probably truly deeply happy, because that's equally part of the motivation that pushes me to...
Would you say that's not truly deeply happy, or would you say that's not being complete?
The better word.
Yeah.
Content. I'm happy, but I don't think I'll ever be content.
Interesting. And you think that's what's driving you forward?
Yeah.
So what's next for you then?
So we've just come off of the back of filling our Leads to Lifestyle program with 27 people. We've got our Success Circle membership community, which will probably end up collectively between the two, we'll probably end up with 100 that we'll be sort of working with. So it's just going to be going all in on those existing clients. Whilst then equally focusing on making the brokerage more automated, because we were talking before, I don't think social media works in the way it did for me sort of 2016 to 2020 time.
Yeah, what got you here won't get you there.
Yeah, so it's almost exactly that. A lot of what got me to this point now isn't going to get me to that next phase. And it's just around, I've looked back at my journey, and almost every year has kind of had a theme. So it's like 2016 was the year of, it didn't prior to that, but like 2016 was the year of relearning. 2017 was the year of earning the same amount of money, but technically working less. And that was obviously when I started to go into masterminds and mentorships and stuff like that. 2018 was then the systems year, before I then had the year of recruitment in sort of 2019. 2020 was just, for all of us, the year of survival and riding the wave and dealing with whatever kind of came our way. 2021 and sort of 2022 was much of the same sort of mentality, the year of just
preservation and
surviving. Yeah, and sort of existing because of mom and various other little things. This year has been about the year of restructuring. Sacking off a lot of the stuff and, you know, really condensing down. You know what they say, less is more. So bloody true.
But do you think you have to go through the pain of realizing you're spinning far too many plates? You know, we always talk about the analogy of the swan, isn't it? You know, that you're busy, busy, busy. But it seems like you're the swan who's just kind of gliding along at the minute, still got wheels turning, but everyone in place. Do you think you have to go through the hardship before you realize less is more and double down on what you're really good at?
Definitely. Like if you imagine 10 spinning plates and you've got 10 plates spinning, you can only give 10% of your time to each one of those spinning plates. So the goal is, I think everybody probably doesn't try enough things to find out what works for them.
So you've got to
spin more plates to then be able to go, right, that one actually doesn't really matter. Let's drop that one. And then all of a sudden you're now giving, I'm not going to do the maths. But you know, you're now giving 100% to 9 plates and then slowly but surely condense those down. So, you know, now I'm 2 plates and it's 50-50 on each.
Oh, but how do you then do that without being the shiny penny chaser, which I've definitely been guilty of? He's doing this and really well at it, I should do that. She's making loads of money doing this, I should do that. How do you then find the fine line between being a busy fool and chasing lots of shiny pennies? Because I think that the lesson there was, you test it and then go, that doesn't work. How do you create a skill set where you can walk away from stuff?
I think the 70-20-10 property model. I think is probably the, and my 70-20 shifts all the time.
This is important.
And that's, you know, the 70-20 shifts all the time. If you imagine the training business and the brokerage, and that's obviously the two that I bounce between. Most of the 70% this year has been on the training business. Yeah. To get that kind of there and get that sorted. Now, as we go into Q4, it's like now the 70% is going to be all in on the brokerage, you know, because the focus is making sure the clients are happy, but we've not got to get any new ones in. So,
which you can afford. The cliche tips for what you've done, though, isn't it? Because you've always been about leads and lead generation. Yeah. But is that the process of a business that's grown? So you still believe that everyone's got to focus on the leads, get really consistent at it, get really good at it?
Yeah.
At what point do you stop and kind of go, okay, I don't need more leads. I need to nurture the people that I've got and actually focus on, you know, the people who are the repeat customers, returning customers, the ones who've got, you know, consistency there.
Yeah, you have to know your numbers. That's the key thing. And it's working out, again, that numbers factor of sitting down and saying, right, how many inquiries do we need? How many sales do we want off of the back of those inquiries? And then I did a video for YouTube this week around, you know, three ways to grow a business. One is to get more leads in. Two is to maximize each and every single value of those sales. And then the third one is to get those same customers to buy more often. And it's very much, you can't focus on all three of those at any one point in time, but you can't maximize the value if you haven't got enough inquiries coming in. And you definitely can't get to people to convert more if you obviously haven't solved the problem number one. So I take people through lead sales strategy because they want the quick wins.
Yep.
They're the quick wins we can get. Then we can give them space to go, now let's devise a strategy because I've covered that. And then we can kind of go finance systems and team and then just keep them virtuously spinning is kind of the gist.
I love how systematic it is, both in business and in life, and it seems to be working really well. You've done your themes from 2016 onwards. What's the theme for 2024?
I'm going for three, but they're all interlinked. So okay. It's kind of like I started with profit, and then I was like, well, that's all good because I don't want to grow the team much bigger than what I necessarily have got right now because, you know, I've still got young children, so I still value lifestyle around that and I don't want to push too hard. So profit was where it started. Then, as we both agree, brand is really important. So building that brand around more serviced base, less financial services.
Mm-hmm.
Building that brand will then equally lead to buying.
Yep.
So it's brand, buying and profit is my kind of focus for those. We should actually, now I'm saying it, I'm going to change it from BBP to profit, brand and buying.
Profit, brand and buying. That's the focus for 2024.
Correct. Yeah.
Well, you have created the lifestyle that many people would love to have. You've created businesses that many people would love to have and I'm super conscious of your time. So I don't want to take too much up, but I do want to ask a question that I ask all of my guests, which is, what is the one subject matter no one ever discusses or the one question that no one ever asks that you think is really important? What's the one question you want to be asked or what's the one subject matter where you think no one ever brings that up, but it's vital? And if it makes you think, that's exactly the purpose of my question.
So what's the one question that people need to ask that they don't ask?
Mm-hmm.
That's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it comes back to one that you did ask me earlier. I have this thing in my weird brain of like, what is this whole life realistically about? Why are we designed to wake up in the morning to, in my circumstance, wake up in the morning, go to the gym, end up in a working environment, whatever that kind of means. And today I'm luckily having lunch in a very nice restaurant with a good friend of mine, which is still work.
Yeah.
This is work, doing this podcast with you, to then go home to spend time with our kids, to then have a couple of hours on the sofa watching Netflix with the wife, to then go to bed and repeat that cycle day after day for however many years. And I question it all the time. I'm like, why is this life? Why do we go out to earn money to then pay for holidays that we have to do in half term? And, you know, this whole thing around so many people go through years and years and years of their life and then actually only really start to enjoy it when they retire.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the real important question that people sort of need to ask that is probably multiple questions is like, what is your definition of success, as you kind of said earlier? But equally, what do you realistically want from your life and from those hours that we have? And I don't know if you've seen that picture that goes around, but it's like the number of dots on a board. So there's a picture that's there. And it's like all the dots on the board represent a year of your life.
Ah.
And then obviously some of them are coloured in for like, so I'd have 42 coloured in and I'm going to at least over 100. That's like the thing I've got in my mind, especially with our, I think the average is like 80 now, isn't it? But if people can get really super clear on anything that they want during that time, then why can't we achieve anything that we want? So get clear on what success means to you. Get clear on the true lifestyle that you want. And then are you aligning with those two things in everything that you do and every decision that you make every single day? Even to the point of, you know, is the job the one that you should necessarily be in?
Question everything.
Yeah, question everything.
I love that. What a great way to end the podcast. I want to say a huge thank you for you investing your time to do the podcast today and allowing me to come here. I really appreciate it. So if anyone wants to follow you, we're going to put all of your socials and your links in the show notes. You've got a few different opportunities for people to join in, things like your success circle, things like, what was the Leads to Lifestyle?
Leads to Lifestyle Accelerator.
So if anyone wants to follow you, you've got YouTube channels, you've got your own podcast, you're an author, still doing all of those things. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks very much for having me.